and welcome to Aldi's Mamia and Me podcast. I'm Jen Hogan and today I'm joined by Jackie Hurley. Jackie is a celebrated broadcaster, author, advocate for women's sport and also a dedicated mum of two. With a career that has spanned across radio, television, literature and more, she's here today to talk all about her family life, her career and her advocacy for women in sport. Jackie, welcome.
How are you?
Great. It is brilliant to have you here. Thanks a million
for having me.
And the colour of you. You were away on halls.
I was. We took the kids to Spain last week and it was glorious. Just being able to sit out and relax with them. It was brilliant. Great time of year to get away.
Oh, I tell you, it's a hard life, but someone's got to live it.
Yep.
And did it take you back a little bit to your own childhood in Australia and the sunshine and stuff?
We don't see the sunshine enough here. So you kind of do feel like you have to get away, because now that we have a winter that seems to last 6 months in Ireland, if you don't get away, you will definitely feel it.
Absolutely. No, I think that's why the last few days have been bliss. The last few days, everyone will know now it is early May.
Yeah.
Or mid-May. Yeah. We've had 2 days of summer. Can you tell me, what was life like though? Can you remember what it was like living in Australia?
Yeah, I loved it. We moved there when I was 3. I was there till I was 10. So really my formative primary school years were there. And like the big thing really there is, you know, we talked about being outdoors and being in the sun. That's what I remember. Like it was constantly outside. We had a barbecue. My dad had built us this like above ground pool outside with a trampoline where you'd jump from the trampoline into the pool. We spent like all of our days out in the backyard playing, and like just such happy memories there really. Like, and that's probably where my love of sport started really, because it's such a sporting nation, really built for the outdoors. And I would say that that's probably where it all started. Yeah.
I suppose it's easier a little bit, isn't it? Like you said, when you have that good weather, like I see, we have kids the same age or similar age, and I see my own, especially the last few days where the weather has been nice, they are outside all the time. And we're always lamenting this whole thing of kids spending too much time on screens. But I know, given the choice, mine would rather be outside playing football or playing games with their friends than they would
100%.
Sitting inside.
Oh, we're exactly the same. Yeah. And to be honest, like I always say that to my kids. I was just like, once the sun goes down, you can come in and do whatever you want. But if the sun is out, you need to appreciate it, because tomorrow it could be raining and you'd be saying, God, I wish I got outside. And we were always like that. My mom used to close the door behind us and say, come back, I'll call you for your dinner. And we were never inside. And like, we did have video games and stuff like that, but it never felt like that was the first choice. Yeah. And I always tried to instill that in my kids as well. I'm not saying they don't play video games and stuff, of course they do, but if they were given a chance of playing outside with a ball or being inside, they'd be 100% outside every day of the week.
Did you find that when you moved back, Jackie, and the weather maybe wasn't as conducive to playing sports outside, did you find that you were a little bit on your own then, being a girl who was so into sports?
Well, the thing is, it was just trying to find something else.
Yeah.
And actually, basketball became such a big part of our lives because it was an indoor sport. And my mom and dad were really sure that, okay, if they're going to play sport, we're going to find something that they can do all year round. So that's why we would have played GAA, we would have played soccer, we would have played whatever it was outside in the sun. But then they made sure we had a winter sport as well, which I'd often say to parents, I'd be like, just think about your options, because let's say take the start of this year, from January to April, I would say our kids probably had their GAA matches called off 60% of the time, maybe even more. Whereas if you're playing an indoor sport, the chance of that being called off, you know, unless there's a hole, has a leak in it, that sport is not getting called off. So you're giving your kids an opportunity to keep playing. And that's why, I'm not saying that's the only reason that they picked it, but they were definitely aware that let's find something that's going to help them to be active all year round. The basketball season runs from September till April, May, and then we would have had the summer playing other sports. So it was the perfect storm for us, really, you know.
So your mum and dad, were they conscious? Because if I had to think back when I was growing up, I played football very, very badly, I should add. I was one of those, but I just loved it. Like I loved football. I was obsessed and I was unusual. Lots more girls into football now, but when I was growing up, football was for boys. Mm-hmm. That was very much the message. Me playing football was something I really wanted to do and had to go out of my way to do and go out of the area to actually play. Did your parents make this a very conscious decision that their daughter should play sport?
They did. And the biggest thing that they did was they got involved. And that's another thing I would often say to parents is sometimes people are worried about going and showing up at a club because maybe they don't have the expertise and they think, oh God, well, but what am I going to do? How am I going to help here? But actually, there's loads of roles in a club for people to do, from administration roles to helping out even on the sideline. My mom and dad, I mean, my mom never really played camogie or basketball, but she was very involved in both of them. My father became the chairman chairman of the Camogie Club because he wanted to make sure that the girls had the same access to it that the boys did. And even subconsciously, it's not like they were out, you know, roaring down the streets. They were just doing it in a very passive way of just, let's get involved in our kids. Let's just get out and play with them. Let's get into the car and drive them across and let's be there. So showing up is actually the biggest thing that you can do for your kids because that's what they're going to see. The other big thing that you mentioned there is I'd have a load of friends who now would not describe themselves as sporty. They would say, oh, you know, I didn't play team sports or I didn't play football. I wasn't involved in that. But these same girls would be running 5Ks, running marathons. They're doing the gym. They're doing yoga. They're Irish dancing. Like all of those things are sport. It's actually just in Ireland, what we classify as sport is a big problem here. Yeah. So we probably need to broaden our horizons and say, yes, all of these people are very active and they're healthy. And that is sport. And I think we're probably isolating a big part of the population by trying to just funnel it into just team sport being sport, you know?
And would you count like dancing around the house? Would that be a sport?
I'm
good at that
one. Jen, you have it down. I am good
at that. You nailed it there when you said about getting involved in sports because I think kids love that, as in their parents getting involved in sports. I think they love to see their parents be part of it. What do your kids make? Because, I mean, everybody knows you, Jackie. So you have, you know, if Jackie's on the sidelines or if Jackie's involved in coaching, do you feel a different pressure? Do the kids get a kick out of everyone knowing
you? To be honest, I think Luke in particular, because he's 10 and he's probably of an age now where he knows what my job is. Yeah. You know, he probably has a better sense of it than maybe Lily, who's 6. But he still wants me to be there. You know, he wants me to coach him all the time. Like I'd always say to him, do you want me to coach you today or would you prefer if I coached your friends or what? And he'd always be like, no, I'd love for you to coach me. So like, I'm enjoying that, Jen, because to be honest, in another year or two, he might be like, go away from me, mom, you're making a holy show of me. So as long as he wants me to be there, I'll be there. And like, I would have been the same with my parents. Mm. There comes a point that having their approval is actually more important to you than anything else, you know? So right now, I love jumping in the car and having the chats and spending that extra time with him and being involved with something that I feel like I'm really helping him with his development of as well, because he knows I played and he knows that I know what I'm talking about. And that probably helps because me saying something to him, he actually listens, which, you know, that doesn't happen as a parent in every other aspect of your life, you know.
There's the key to getting your kids to listen, get involved in their sport and know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
We are seeing, I think, that turnaround. I think you really started to see it, that increase in girls' involvement in sport and the increase kind of in the importance placed on girls' involvement in sport. What we're not seeing, though, is the increase in women as coaches. We're not seeing that yet. And I don't know how to, because I my own husband's involved, like as in he's a coach with one of my son's teams. And I'm always on some sideline or other cheering on some child or other running from A to B. But there is always that shortage of women getting involved. And I suppose it is an all-male environment, typically an all-male environment, which perhaps is why mums don't feel as comfortable getting involved. Or like you said, they don't feel as comfortable or don't know as much about the sport, might think that themselves, and it may not even be the case. But how do you reckon we change that?
Well, the biggest thing is actually the knowledge base for a lot of the mums that I talk to. They feel like they can't stand on the sideline because they didn't play.
Right.
And a lot of the reasons they might not have played is for all the ones that you've just outlined. It might not have been in their school. It might not have been in their club. The support wasn't there. So you're actually having an age group of women between 40 and 55 who felt like they didn't have the same opportunities that girls have now. And the knock-on impact is actually being felt in the coaching now. What I would say is, if there are foundation courses in your club, get involved and do them, because there'll be loads of people like me or other coaches who might have played at a high level, but they haven't done those coaching badges either. So you're actually starting at the same level as all of those people. And that's something that I always encourage my friends that maybe they haven't thought of, because they're thinking, like, for instance, my cousin, I'm sure she won't mind me saying this, but she never really played camogie or football or whatever, but her daughter was a star from when they were younger, really, really brilliant. And they both got involved. And because my cousin's daughter was really successful, she thought, you know what, I'm going to get involved. I'm going to start coaching. Mm-hmm. But like that, she was worried, how do I advance to the level? But she went off, did all her foundation courses, got really involved. And now her daughter is playing for Dublin and she's looking after the team and she's really involved in the coaching setup. And I was saying to her, fair play to you for not only just bringing your daughter and taking her on the journey, but also being part of it now, because now she has the confidence to stand on the sideline and know that maybe maybe she doesn't have all the skills of the game herself, but she can certainly impart a huge amount of knowledge from what she's gone off and studied. Uh-huh. So I would always encourage moms to go and do the foundation courses and to go and just get the coaching badges and know then that you have the confidence to stand there, because it's not about how far you can puck the ball. Mm-hmm. It's about what you can teach your kids. And I hope that people remember that, because it's definitely daunting. And the other thing I would say is, when you turn up to those coaching courses, you're going to think that you're walking into a room full of men. But the more of your friends that you can talk into coming with you, there's a better chance that you're going to have a 50-50 room where there's a lot of women involved. And a lot of clubs run like Hurl With Me programs and that kind of thing as well, where if you can just kick the ball with your kids in the background, in the backyard, that's all you're looking for.
Women bring such different sometimes, but also brilliant things to coaching as well. And sometimes the children on the team will relate a little bit differently to them. But you see what an asset women are to the coaching setup. And it's if we could just change that mentality amongst the mums and the women who want to get involved and realise, as well as the fact that everybody's starting on the base, but that they also, they add something to the team by being there, and they bring that comfort and that knowledge and their own strength to the team and to the kids that are part of the team. But it's just like you said, that age, still feeling the sport is for men, sport is for...
Yeah, completely. And look, it does take a club approach to actually go and actively seek these women. Because often if you're running a club, you're down there and you see these moms on the sideline and they're standing outside the gates. The best thing you can do is walk outside the gates and go and have a chat to them and be like, how are you? What are you into? What's your son or your daughter doing there? Would you like to get involved? We've all these roles. We'd love to see you. I have a load of friends who are involved in our club and not necessarily in a coaching capacity, but they do a million other things, whether it comes to a festival of football or whatever, and they get involved in those kind of roles. There are loads of things for people to do in a community capacity that they can do if the coaching is so daunting that they don't want to be involved. What you will find is a lot of the men are generally the ones who are really encouraging the women to do it. It's just the women are, it's that fear, you know. So I think once you find a few comrades and men to support you, then I think it's like any boardroom, Jen. You want it to be diverse so that everybody has different ideas and they all bring them to the table for it to be better for everyone. And that's as important in a coaching sense as it is in a professional capacity.
How important do you think friendships are within clubs? Because it's a big draw, isn't it? A lot of our kids get involved in stuff because their pals are doing
100%. Sure, it's the biggest driver of sport is they want to be there because that's where their friends are. Yeah. And, you know, I think even in the smaller years, you're trying to find that balance between putting them with their friends, but also allowing them to grow and develop and meet other people through sport. Like one thing that I always say to my kids is when I was growing up, I had girls that I went to school with. I had girls I played basketball with. I had girls I played camogie with. Then I had girls I went to college with, and all those different friend groups still exist in my life. And I always say that to my kids. I'm like, you can go and play with boys and girls from other schools and they will be your friends in a different capacity. So it's really important that when you do turn up, that you're open to making friends with a whole new range of different people. But also as coaches, trying to understand the dynamics of sometimes if you put these two books together, they're going to be messing and whatever. And there's definitely a balance with that. But I think the best thing that we can do is just to try to allow them to be open to making those friendships and to support them, because these friendships that they make at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age, they could be friends with those people for 20 to 50 years to come. And they're really, really important that we foster that.
So what about equal play time for all?
I'm a big fan of it, to be honest, particularly at this age group, because I just think it's not the All-Ireland, you know, and I think sometimes we do have to remind ourselves as coaches of that. Yes, it's important that kids understanding that winning and losing, but there is a time and a place for that. And there are certain competitions that are protected for that. And I have no problem with saying, look, this competition, we want to try out these players. We want to see what this is like. If everybody understands that that's what the message is. But I think fundamentally, kids just want to play. And if they learn one lesson, it's that their support of each other is actually the most important thing. Yeah. Because one boy might have a day where things don't go his way and they lose a match and he feels under pressure that it's his fault. But the worst thing that his friends can do is turn around and blame him. Yeah. And actually, by having equal play for all, then the result is actually not as important. All you're worrying about is, did we all have fun? Did we enjoy ourselves? And more importantly, do they all want to come back the next day? Because forever, when we start losing children from sport, the first phone call that we need to be making is to those parents to say, was there anything more that we could have done for your son or daughter to keep playing? And if it's that they felt it was too competitive and that there was too much of a push on not being equal play and trying to win a game, then I don't think we're doing our jobs then, because I do think having these kids playing sport in another 20 years should be the primary focus.
That's, oh my God, that just makes my heart sore. Yeah. You say that, but it is, I suppose it is that message that we do, and that is the thing we want. That's the goal, you know, as many as possible for as long as possible. That's the goal.
That's it. And actually on that, right, one big thing, lots of people in sport always talk to me about streaming kids, you know.
Yeah.
They all say, is it a good thing? Is it not? Or whatever. I would have been, and I'll say this openly, I would have been very anti-streaming at the start, because I always thought, God, it's not fair to put a tag of an A, B or a C on a child or whatever. But actually, the older I get, the more I realise it's not so that the better kids get more time or whatever. It's actually so that everybody does. Because now you see, like, some of our kids who might have been in a developmental stage where maybe they've just taken a little bit longer to grasp some basic skills, the growth of their development has been massive. And actually, in so many ways, they're the children who have developed the most out of all of this, because they're getting more time on the ball, smaller side games, and they're playing with peers at their level. So by them being allowed to grow at their own pace has actually been really good for them. And then the A boys are all playing together and learning at a different phase and a different pace. But actually, I think I'm really, the more I see it now, the more I believe that it's the right thing to do for our children. And I'm sure there will be people who listen to this and say, I don't agree with it. I think kids should just be able to play at every level. But always remember, would you like your child to touch the ball more and to be more involved? Or would you like your child to be standing on the side and not getting the ball? And I certainly know with my kid, whatever level they were playing at, I'd like for them to be able to get the ball and feel like they were involved. And that's why I really think streaming is actually a really good idea.
I hear you on that. I'm not in favour of streaming, I'll be honest. And I think one of my reasons for that, though, is, I suppose, if I was to take it back to academics, and you look at, there was research before that showed children within school who were streamed, and maybe all the high achievers put together, they performed the same as if they were put into a mixed ability class. The students who academically struggled a little bit more, when they were put into a mixed ability class or into a class of other children who also struggled, they performed better in the mixed ability class. So they kept up. So, I mean, I don't know if that translates onto the pitch, but it's certainly something that I think about. I also think, and I was going to ask you about this, the winning versus losing. And sometimes the argument about equal play for all is the idea that the kids know if they win or lose. And of course they know that. Of course they do. And we, you know, is the same not true of streaming, that the kids are aware, particularly if they're streamed down, that to a club that is or a team that is considered down, or that's how the adults maybe view it, that they're going, I'm not playing well enough to play with my friends anymore.
Yeah, but they know that, though. The thing is, kids know where their level is before adults even speak. And actually, sometimes it's the adults who get in the way.
Yeah.
If there's ever an issue, it's never with the children. It's always with the parents,
adults,
because the parents are the ones on the sideline saying, my boy should be here, or my daughter should be here, or whatever. Yeah. If you let the kids sort it out, and here's an interesting experiment, right? Yeah. Let's say on a Friday afternoon, your kids are having a play date and they're down in the park, and you ask them to pick teams. They will pick two teams that are equal, because kids want competitive nature. So they will say, okay, you know, let's put the two best boys, let's put them on opposite teams and let's whatever. Kids will actually sort out all of these things for themselves. So if you gave the kids the opportunity, they'd probably want it to be competitive, and they'd find a way of saying it. If I ask my son, where would he rank himself? He'd rank himself down rather than up. Mm. It's not that he'd be saying, I should be here, I should be there, or whatever. Generally, in their senses, they'd actually put themselves down rather than up. So the interesting experiment is not watching the children, it's actually watching the parents.
Moving on to yourself now and the Sunday game. Huge, huge job. Something that you always, the dream job.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, it's funny, because when something comes full circle, when you're actually doing it now, like, I mean, I would have spoken publicly before about the first time it came around and I didn't get it. Just the disappointment of trying to pull yourself back on course, and just, you know, nothing is ever linear in life, you know, and I think I probably would have been guilty of this, where that road closed off in front of me and I couldn't see what the future looked like. I didn't know where was my place in the job that I do, where was it going. Whereas I think now I probably it's a lot easier to do it, to sit back when you have the gig and you can kind of recognize, all right, okay, maybe this was for me after all. So it's definitely a strange position to be in, and also to just kind of sit and recognize that you got to do the thing that you dreamed of. There's not a lot of people get to do that. So it's pretty cool.
And what do the kids make of it? Again?
Again. Like, it's funny because when you're on TV, your kids, they didn't choose it. And they are probably embarrassed by it a little bit as well. And particularly when I go into their school, like I'd often get like asked into the school to do like sports day or Patrick's Day parades or whatever. And, you know, my kids would be like, Mommy, you're going to be on the microphone. And there's a part of them kind of delighted. And then there's a part of them really mortified, you know, especially if I give them a shout out on it, like they're definitely like heads down. But then when they really enjoy it is, you know, when their friends come over and they're chatting and they're like, oh, what do you think of the match? What do you think of this or whatever? Then it's suddenly cool to them because other people are interested in, you know, so there's definitely probably a difficulty there in their minds of how do they grasp it all, you know.
And do you find it hard because of timings and stuff? Do you find it hard with family life working on the Sunday?
Yeah,
game?
I mean, the weekends are difficult. Yeah. Like, we're very lucky that Shane doesn't work on the weekends. Right. So he's around with the kids and we can kind of juggle that much. You know, the one thing is, I'm around, like I do the school drop-offs all week, you know, so I'm around every day during the week. Really, I mean, there might be the odd thing where I have to jump off and do something, but generally I'm around, I get to do their homework with them and all that. So I get a lot of things that other moms and dads don't, and I'm always really aware of that I have to be lucky of that. But the weekends are difficult because I'm working Saturdays generally on a lot of rugby and then Sundays with the GAA. So it's a big juggle. What I try to do is get there in the morning, do their coaching with them in the morning, and then go off to work then in the afternoon, because both of us are really involved in both of our kids. And like, I love being on the sideline with them and I don't want to give that up, you know, and the day that I have to give up everything for my job, then that would become really difficult. But right now we have a good balance that it works out. It's not always perfect. And there is I got one of those like kind of whiteboard planners for the wall, and it's like literally a big sheet and it has everyone.
You're one of those moms.
I had to be, Jen.
Oh my God, I'm judging you.
I will say I'm very proud that it's like color coded by child and whatever, and has it all up there because I have to be organized, because otherwise balls are going to be dropped and I don't want to be in a scenario where on a Tuesday evening one of my children has a match and I've totally forgotten about it. And
that would be terrible if that happened.
I know.
Totally terrible.
That's why you have to be organized. You just like, it's the only thing that works for me. My husband is an accountant. He loves an Excel spreadsheet. So having a whiteboard planner on the wall is...
Now it's starting to make sense. Now I get it. I'm just glad that I wouldn't forget a match. That would never happen.
In fairness, Jane, you have 7 children. I only have 2 to look after. It's probably a lot easier. You know?
Yeah, give me an out there. Thanks, Jackie. So if you're not embarrassing your kids then by being MC at the Patrick's Day Parade or talking on sports days or just generally being at the school gates, you're embarrassing them by writing books then and being really a really famous author. How is that?
Yeah, like I probably always wanted to write a book. It's just, if you are going to ever do a book, you have to have something that you're really passionate about. And I didn't want to just do a book for the sake of doing something. And I thought long and hard about what is the thing that I am most passionate about. And it is probably keeping kids involved in sport and young girls in particular. Yeah. And that's why Girls Play 2 came about. I always just felt like, do you know, when I was younger, Sonia O'Sullivan was my hero. Yeah. Absolutely loved her. I thought she was amazing. I mean, still is one of my heroes to this day. But it felt to me like Sonia O'Sullivan was the only woman in sport who really got that admiration and the proper treatment of a rock star sports person. Yep. Whereas like now you're looking around, you've got like Leona Maguire, Rachel Blackmore, Katie Taylor, Katie McCabe. There's so many amazing stars out there that are deserving of those platforms. Mm-hmm. But we need to make sure that our young girls know everything there is to know about them. And I was like, I always felt you could change maybe 10% of adults' minds with a book and do something like that. But you could change the future for children by giving a children's book that actually opens their minds to a whole other world that they didn't know existed. And one of the things I love most now is going into primary schools or going into clubs and meeting young girls. And, you know, I was at Helen Back the other day. My son was doing the run and this girl came up to me in the car park and she just ran over and said, "Hi, I have your books," you know. Aww. And like, I don't know how she recognized me because I was like head to toe in muck in a field. But she came over and I was like, "Oh, that's great. I love hearing that." And she was like, "Thanks." And she ran running off. And I was like, that to me is what it is for. It's those young girls who have an opportunity to read something that you and I never had. Yeah. I would have loved a book like that when I was younger. And I thought, why am I waiting around for somebody else to do this when I could do it? And so, like, I'm not saying it's going to change the world, but it might just change the output I guess the mindset of those young girls to know that they can have a future like those girls.
And again, I presume the kids are super proud.
Oh, they loved it. I mean, and really, actually, it's funny because Luke is the oldest and he's obviously a boy. I bounced a load of them off him. Like, so he read a load of the stories before it went to print. And I always thought, oh, maybe I don't know if he's going to get it, you know, because a lot of them were about struggles of female athletes. But he asked the most like simple, basic questions. He'd be like, for one of them, let's say the Cork ladies footballers weren't playing in Porkycreeve. Yeah. And he was like, why didn't they play in Porkycreeve? Like, why? Like,
that is probably something we don't acknowledge enough about today's boys coming up. There's so much talk about, particularly maybe the teenage boys and misogyny and stuff and the sort of content coming at them. But I noticed that from my own young sons too. They are all about equality and they can't understand why they're not.
Go to matches. So like oftentimes now, I might come home and I'd say, here, Ireland are playing, do you want to watch? And Luke would go, boys or girls? And I'd be like, oh, boys this time or whatever, girls. Like we went into the Republic of Ireland women's game against England and Luke had the match program out and he was talking about all the players that he loves and he was like, I watched this girl playing at Arsenal and she plays for Chelsea and she plays for Barcelona, about all the England players, you know, and then the Ireland players, he could name all of them. And afterwards we had to leave early because we had just had to get out of there. And I turned around, both of them were bawling, crying that we couldn't go down and get autographs. And actually a couple of the players messaged me afterwards and they were like, look, don't worry, we'll sort you out. We'll meet you at some point. And I was saying, I'd love that, because all they want to do is meet those Ireland players. And like Luke treats them like they're the men's players. Yeah. Like there's no difference. He doesn't see any difference at all. So again, when I go back to, it's never a problem with children. It's actually what do the adults, what do we perceive? We're the ones who have put this onto our children. Uh-huh. We're the ones who talk about it. So I try now to always, when he asks me a simple question, I try to give him a direct answer. So when he would say, why weren't the women playing in Porkycreeve? I'd be like, do you know what, Luke? Here's why. Boys were allowed to play there and girls weren't. And he'd be like, well, sure, that's stupid. And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
You remember that because when you're in a position to be asked about it, I would love for you to say that. And I would often say to him, like even with the men's team, when the Republic of Ireland women's team were looking to try to get an equal pay agreement, Seamus Coleman and James McLean were the ones who came out and said, here's what we're going to do. The men were taking a pay cut and then the girls were able to get more money because of the men taking a stance. And so by teaching our young sons that this is the right moral thing to do, we're going to teach them to be men who do the same.
Yeah.
And I was really glad to see people like Seamus taking a stand because it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. You know? And when you were writing the book, Jackie, were there any stories that really stood out for you?
Yeah, like, I mean, to be honest, there were so many people, even trying to research it, it was like, do you remember in X Factor with judges' houses where they had the post-its out and they were trying to pick who was in or who was out? I have a few friends in work who I would have always kind of sought their counsel on different things, and sure, we were all moving them around. What about this one? What about this one? And you're trying as much as you can to have a broad base of sports people so that it's not all just GA players or rugby players or whatever it was. So trying to make, the hardest thing for me was actually narrowing it down to 25 athletes. Like I could have done 10 books. Like when I first spoke to the publishers, I wanted to make it 100 and they were like, grand, yeah, but no kid is going to be able to hold that in their bag because it's going to be about this thick. So trying to pick the athletes was the hardest thing. I knew in my heart and soul that the number one athlete that I wanted was Katie Taylor. And I rang her and I said, hey, I want you to be part of this. And she said yes immediately. Mm-hmm. Because the one thing is with Katie, she knows what it means for her legacy to have other young girls doing her sport. Mm-hmm. And so she is probably one of the biggest advocates of women's sport that we've ever had, because not only has she kept raising her own ceiling, but she's been bringing that groundswell of people with her for 20 years now. So once Katie Taylor was on board, it was a very easy conversation to go and get everybody else to be part of it. And in all of them that I asked, there was not one of them that said no. They were all so invested in it because each one of them has had their own struggles in different ways and all of them wanted to be better for the future. So even just going back and researching on some of the people who had gone by before us and just, you know, even people like Mary Peters and different athletes who had gone by that I never got to watch in person, even just reading about some of their stories was so eye-opening, just of some of the journeys that a lot of these women had gone on. So it's probably the thing that I'm most proud of in all of my life and doing the job that I do. It's an amazing career and I absolutely love it. But when people often ask me, what are the thing you're most proud of? It's probably publishing the books because of the impact that it had on the people that I really wanted to speak to.
that's the goal, isn't it? That, yeah. And to know that was realised.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, listen, sometimes you can be really cliched about things and say, oh, it was all for you and it was whatever. But it was one of those passion projects that it really was for children. So when you see them then writing about their sports stars or sending you letters or talking about it, that's when you know you're making a real impact. Uh-huh. And like that, that's all we want to do. Yeah. You just want to make it better for the ones who come after you.
So Jackie, the Olympics, tell me about that.
I love the Olympics. This will be my fourth one this summer, which is kind of hard to believe. It's just the years go by in such a flash.
That actually is fourth. Oh
yeah,
my God.
So I went to my first one in London 2012, and that was when Katie Taylor won her Olympic gold medal. And, you know, those are the moments that stay with you forever. Like that day when she won the gold medal, there was 9,000 people in the Excel Arena, and I would say all of them were Irish. Yeah. Like coming out, listening to people singing The Fields of Athenry. She walked out. Her ring walk was to Rihanna's Only Girl in the World, and the place was just rocking, and it was something that I'll remember forever, because just an Irish person with that much pressure on them to go in and to win a gold medal in front of the world. The like, boxing was only in the Olympic Games for women because of Katie Taylor. Yeah. So imagine the pressure that was on her to deliver. And then just having moments like the O'Donovans in 2016, Kelly Harrington in 2020, Ellen Keane at the Paralympics in 2021. Like those moments are things that will stay with you forever. And I think we go to Paris this year with the biggest ever Irish team. We have potentially 6 medals is the most we've ever won at Olympic Games. And we have the potential to win more than that this year. I know you probably say that every time an Olympic cycle goes around, but Ireland have been getting better and better over the years. When you look at success on the track with the athletes that we're having at the moment, I think our show jumpers, the rugby sevens, you know, there's so many other sports that are coming to the fore now that it's just, it's such an exciting time to be an Irish sports fan.
Well, how will your whiteboard cope with that
now? Oh, here, listen, it's actually so bad that Shane is having to bring the kids to Paris. And I always said to him,
oh God, love him.
Well, because he couldn't handle being at home and me being over there having all the crack and him having to be at home and listening to it. So he said, you know what?
Kids.
I'm going to go to Paris and I'm going to bring the kids to the Olympics, because there won't be one in Europe again for 12 years. And
it's
my children
martyr,
will be grown ups by then. So I said, bring them to Paris and let's go. So he's after getting tickets for a few events and he'll
amazing.
Bring them. And I just think it'll be a great experience for kids to go and see something completely different. So they're going to a few of the athletics meetings. They've got tickets for handball and a few different things. I just said, just go experience it, because it's something you'll remember forever.
That is brilliant. That's like just such a deadly thing to be able to do, and also makes life easier for you.
Well, exactly. I think he was just like, whiteboard, Paris. Go to Paris. Yeah.
Paris will hands down.
Yeah.
Could I ask you actually, just, sorry, I know this is maybe a hard thing to talk about in terms of having Lou, because when you had a little boy, because you lost your own brother, and I know you spoke to me about that before, but could you tell us a little bit about your brother and the impact that that had on your life, and then you becoming the mother of a boy after his terrible loss?
Yeah, like it's just unimaginable grief for any family to go through. When like Sean was the youngest in our house, so he was 25 when he died. So, you know, when you're thinking, I think for any parent, and now that, you know, we both have kids, you're sitting here as a mom and you're thinking, how could it possibly be
that person?
Yeah, you just, you never, I think when you have your own children, you realize the grief that your parents went through. Like, because I could only think about it as a sibling at that time, you know, and you're just, you've grown up with this person, and there was 3 kids in our house. My sister was 15 months older than me. My brother was 2 years younger than me. And we were really close. You know, we did so much together as a family. We were always out and about, and Sean would have been really into sport as well. So we would have spent our life on sidelines or the side of a track watching him racing motorbikes, or he'd be at me and my sister's games. So we were just really, really close. So when the youngest person in your family goes, there's a big part of your family is just ripped apart, you know? So you kind of have to find a way to start living again. And the one thing I find is having children gives you a new purpose, you know, because I think even for my mom and dad, having grandchildren, they, you know, I have 2 kids, my sister has 2 kids, and watching my parents now with them, it certainly allowed them to kind of not restart, but maybe reset and to have a kind of a new life with their grandchildren. And I remember when we were having Luke, we had toyed with the idea of calling him Sean. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting in the after the labor ward after he was born, you know, and I was kind of, you know, you're really emotional and it's all kind of coming out. And I was chatting to Shane and I was like, I'm just not sure. And he was like, don't rush it. And I remember the midwife said to me, you don't have to make the decision right now. Mm. Just wait until you're comfortable. This is your decision. Just tell people there's a baby boy and he's happy and he's healthy and take a few days and think about it. And she said, I'd remind you to sit in the room and call his name and see how it feels when you're calling his name. And then when I heard it out loud, I couldn't do it. I just found it really difficult to keep calling his name. And knowing that my mom and dad were going to have to look at this beautiful blonde-haired boy like their own child. Mm. And I was like, I just don't know if I can do that to them. Even though I think they probably would have loved if I called him Sean, I just didn't think I could do that to them. So he's Luke Sean instead. And in fairness, Sean knows, like Luke knows what Sean meant to us, and he knows that he's called after him. And there's lots of his traits that he has and lots of his characteristics. And there'd be oftentimes, you know, he'd ask about him and he'd be like, was he into this? Was he into this? And we're always talking about him. And that's the one thing in my family I would say, and I'm sure there's a lot of families who listen to this who've been through different grief stories of their own. I'm always wanting to keep his memory alive. And whatever that's through, we always try and find a way to, oh, Sean would love this, or we'd do this for Sean or whatever. And so having Luke and Lily know that that's important to me as well is really big, you know.
Has it shaped maybe even how you parent?
Definitely. Yeah. Because I think as well, you're really aware of how fickle life is and how precious the whole thing is, and that in any instance it can be gone. So we are very live by the moment kind of people. You know this about me anyway. Yeah. I am very seize the day. I very rarely say no to things that I feel I should be doing because, you know, look, you can get in your own head and you can stop yourself from doing loads of things that you know are going to be super fun and whatever. I'm very much like, I'd love to do that. That sounds great. Let's do it. You know, and I'm the same with my kids. I'm just like, go for it, because life is so short. And I know that, like, Sean packed more into 25 years than more people could do in 100. He lived life to the absolute max. And I know that he got the most out of himself. You know, he was really successful in everything that he did. And he was just a super guy. But he should be here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have regrets like that. So I'm very just like, perspective is everything. It totally shapes the way I am with them. And it really shapes the way I am with me.
You actually, even doing things for you, you and Shane take holidays without the kids,
don't
you?
Oh, God.
Like, that's living the dream.
Come here, that's the most precious thing of all. Like, we go away minimum for a week together every year, because why wouldn't you? You know, like, you've got loads
because
of women.
Because babysitters run screaming. That's
well, to be fair, if you've got seven children, that's probably a little harder to ship them out. But with us, we're very lucky that our kids are pretty easygoing as well. They're not hard to be around. Yeah. It's not a chore for anybody to mind them. They're good crack. They eat everything. You know, there's no bothers with them. And sure, my mum and dad or Shane's mum and dad are only delighted to see them. And thankfully, our parents are young enough and able enough to be able to take them too. And that probably makes a big difference. But it's protected time. And actually, it was Shane's mom very early on in our relationship always said, keep time for yourselves, because, you know, even when we were having kids, and it's hard in those first few years to get away. But like, we took Luke away for the first time when he was 10 weeks old, because she had said, look, he's a baby. He'll be a baby anywhere. Just throw him in the sling and off you go. And we've always been like that. You know, just we went to New Zealand when Lily was 5 months. Luke was three. We went in a camper van for 6 weeks, which probably isn't the ideal holiday for a lot of families who might listen to this. But we're just like, look, what's the worst that can happen? Just go and do it. And I think us having our time together has been really good for us. And it's like, it's something that I would never give up. And I would really encourage other people to do it, because it's great.
It's a thing people can feel guilty about if they don't have babysitters.
I don't feel guilty at all, because when I come back, I know that I'm going to be better for them because I feel refreshed. I feel good. I've gotten quality time with their dad where I'm not spending all my time talking about the children. We're just doing things for us. We're off having the crack. Like, we'd go off and rent scooters and go off and do something or, you know, like, just doing things that give us enjoyment is really important, because we're parents, but we're also partners, you know. So away from all that, I want to be with him.
With summer coming up, I suppose a lot of parents are going to be thinking of probably not getting away on their own, but thinking, how are they going to manage the madness of the summer holiday? I know already, like, it's like it's coming between me and my sleep at the moment, wondering how I'm going to manage it. Like, how do you manage it, or how are you going to manage it? Have you any tips for me and anyone listening?
Well, again, what happens is the spreadsheet comes out and I look at all the weeks and I'll say, right, I've got 8 weeks to manage. And just summer camps I would have always been a big advocate of summer camps, because again, getting that activeness of kids. I do understand everybody's not in the same situation, where some people might be away or whatever, or they want their kids to be at home, or there's childminders involved.
The affordability
is the biggest thing though, Jen, because, like, listen, it's not easy to we've got long summers and there's a lot of kids to be entertained. And if you've got multiple children trying to put them into a summer camp that's a couple of hundred euro, that's not easy spend. So if there is a way of, you know, doing something with shared families, like I have a couple of friends in Cork who do this, where one family might take them 1 week. Hey, they're up in our house this week. They're down in your house the next week. And that's a really good way of doing like a mini summer camp in your backyard. Yeah. And I definitely think trying to be creative with your time and pairing up with other parents is a really, really good way of doing
it. Yeah, the pairing up with parents, I suppose, is that one, isn't it? It's like, but you know, you have, I suppose, the thing with the play dates, the reciprocated play dates, the idea of, I'll take them today in the hope that it's returned.
Yeah.
So that at least, you know, you can maybe do a little bit of juggling and balancing there. I think one of the difficulties with the summer camps, though, sometimes is the late start.
Totally.
Isn't it?
And the early finish. A lot
and
of them
the early finish.
If I see a summer camp coming up and it finishes at 12 o'clock, I'm like, that's not a summer camp. That's a babysitting service for 2 hours.
And I suppose, so I know certainly there can be a little bit of sensitivity talking about summer holidays because the schools will rightly remind you they're not babysitting services. Yeah. But at the same time, it's naive to pretend the parents don't work around school hours.
Totally.
Because you cannot leave minors unsupervised. So, you know, this is the
reality. And
that's
the hard thing. Like, let's say when I grew up in Australia, because the seasons are flipped, it's obviously summer over Christmas. So we would have always got 2 weeks at Christmas, 2 weeks at Easter. I think it was 4 weeks in the summer. Yeah. And then it was kind of built in and around it. And similarly in England, the holidays are smaller in the summer. They're much shorter. So there's definitely... there's a balance to be struck. But look, I've got a lot of friends who are teachers as well, and it's not easy work. You know, I think teachers get a lot of heat sometimes, you know, for, oh, sure, you're finished at 3 o'clock and whatever.
Yeah.
I know from the inside, it's not like that either. You know, I just think there has to be a balance between parents trying to work around that and find a job that allows them to do that. Because certainly in the summer, for moms in particular, for working moms, I think you're seeing a lot more of them are taking unpaid leave over a summer, or some of them are still stepping back from working outside the home for those same reasons, because they feel it's not viable. And the one thing is, for women, that's not sustainable forever, because a lot of women might give up work for 10 years to be able to stay at home and mind their children until they're at a point where they can look after themselves and go back out. But those women want to work for them as well. It's not a choice. So we need to remember that if those women do want to go back into the workforce, that we support them in that as well, and that we find a way to say, okay, if it makes more sense financially and it's viable for you to be at home, fantastic. And those are great years that you get to spend with your children. But if you get to a point where you want to go back to work, we need to be able to find a way to make that happen too.
I was chatting to a colleague about this, because it is that really difficult one, and particularly when you have very, very young babies, and there's maybe sometimes a discussion around this about staying at home till a baby's one or something. But what we often forget about is that if a baby's with a childminder, or a toddler's with a childminder, or in a creche, they don't really know it. And the summer's no different to them.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
a continuity. Things are the same. The real pressure comes for a lot of parents when their children attend school, and with midterms and summer holidays. So it's not just that kind of block of 8 or 9 weeks. It's that, and even if you've got somebody who's in secondary school and they're maybe in first year, yes, of course, they're probably old enough to stay at home for a few hours. But are you okay with a 13-year-old
exactly.
at home all
and listen,
day on
that's
their
where
own?
The difficulty comes
that's
for parents, because you're consistently faced with choices.
Yeah.
It's always, am I comfortable with this? Am I comfortable with this? This is happening. And then in the class groups, like you're on all the WhatsApp groups as much as I am, somebody does something. So then somebody else is thinking, we have to do that. And then there's a pressure for, okay, I've got my child a device. And then we're thinking, okay, I have to get my child a device or whatever. It's the same when it comes to somebody making decisions to stay at home. And a lot of it is really based on finances, Jen, as well. Like, that's the big part of it. Like, I have a lot of friends who might have been in a job where they'd say, it's literally, I'm making the same amount of money that it's costing to send my children out in childcare. And at that point, then that becomes a financial decision. And sometimes that's not a choice.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is just, we're doing this for our family, and that it makes the most sense, but it's not necessarily the thing that they would have chosen if they were given all of the opportunities
all
out
the
there.
Others.
So I think parenting is just constantly being faced with a set of circumstances and how you're adapting to it. And that's the hardest part of it all, you know?
It's like The Economist were writing about it there a little while ago, the motherhood penalty versus the fatherhood bonus, and the showing that, you know, that when men become fathers, often their salary will go one way, whereas for women, you'll see the big drop off, but you'll also see the career drop off and the absolute penalty that comes with being a mother because of the choices that it will often be women
And then
make.
The way that we look at some of those mothers as well, who choose to stay in the workforce because they've got a successful job and they want to work, do we punish them and do we look at them in the same way that we look at men as well? Because suddenly some women would be seen as, oh, she's a career woman.
Prioritising that
exactly.
Over the
family. She's doing that.
We do the same to stay. We do the same to women who stay at home. We go, oh, no ambition.
Exactly.
No ambition doesn't really contribute. Exactly. You know?
But
isn't it well for her?
Yeah,
you know?
But we've put them in those brackets. And I do think sometimes we need to look at how we're speaking about women when they're, you know, you talk about people in sponsorship and mentorship. How do we speak about women when they're not in the room?
Yeah.
What do we say about the women at the school gates? When you see a woman coming in and she's dressed in a suit and she's running in and she's late collecting mm-hmm. her son, do we say, oh, look at her now, she's got too much on and she's late collecting the young fella or whatever? But actually, you don't know what she's doing.
Yeah.
She could be in having a massive job, running the country, doing something. Mm-hmm. We just need to think a little bit about how we judge other women
Absolutely.
As well. And we're the worst of it. And listen, we all do it. Mm-hmm. I do it as well. But I just think if we could be a little bit more mindful about how do we support those people, whether they are staying at home or whether they are working, how we make it better for them and how we support each other.
So, Jackie, I have some quick fire questions for you.
Oh,
no
God.
Pressure.
Okay.
But first thing that comes into your mind, and yeah, the first one should be funny. If you could describe each of your children in one word, what would it be and why?
I would say Luke is kind, just a really lovely fella, always has everybody else's interests at heart. And yeah, uh-huh. he's definitely kind. Lily, I would say hilarious.
Right.
She is just absolutely gas, fit for the stage and mighty crack.
If you could only watch one sport for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
I'd say hurling or camogie. I think it's our national sport.
Yeah.
We are so lucky to have something like that. That
yeah.
is such a brilliant sport. That's a spectacle worldwide anytime anybody watches it. And I would say, yeah, I'd happily live a good life watching them for the rest of my life.
Okay. Go-to meal for Luke and Lily.
I make a good lasagna and they love it. My mom was always a really good cook when I was younger, and it's something that I've tried to take some of her recipes and bring them into our house, but I make a mean lasagna.
And now I'm looking forward to this one, your hidden talent.
I don't know if it's really hidden now because I do it so much, but I do a mean maniac 2000. That is my party piece and has been for a very long time. I'm known to pull it out of the bag at parties, weddings, anything.
Okay.
So there's probably so much footage of me doing it out there that it's not much of a
All right.
secret.
So
but it's
on
my,
the mum's night
yeah.
out.
Oh yeah.
this
it
is
comes,
what everyone
it comes
can expect.
Out of the bag. It comes out of the bag more often than it probably should, Jen, to be honest. Yeah.
Everybody be getting ready for their mania 2000
yeah.
the summer
yeah.
night. Sounds good. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And what is your best Aldi middle aisle purchase and why?
An air fryer. Oh my God.
Oh no.
Sorry. I know my life without it. I know it is a cult. But actually, I was one of those people that was like, what are you all talking about with the air fryers? But middle aisle picked it up.
Middle aisle.
Game changer.
Wondering, were you planning? Were you
no,
planning
I wasn't.
It? Having a wander down the middle
aisle.
Do you
ever plan to
do?
Buy anything in the middle aisle? No, you do not. You just stroll and then you're like, oh, there's a pair of wellies. There's an air fryer. There's some ski gear. Yep, I'd love all of that. And then you're walking out. You look like somebody who's lost, who's just gone and just picked up all these things. But that is me and that is what happens.
I have such a mental image. You got in your wellies, ski gear and your air fryer
yeah.
underneath your...
There's nothing wrong with that though,
well,
you know.
I look forward to the next book on Jackie's air fryer yeah. recipes in the Aldi middle. Watch out for
you
our special
know.
Buys and
you
you'll spot
never
it.
Know.
Thank you so much to Jackie Hurley for chatting to us today. We'd love to keep reaching new listeners, so if you've enjoyed, please do tell a friend or give us a share online. And you can have a listen to previous episodes wherever you get your usual podcasts. If you have any questions for us or guest suggestions, please drop us an email at mamiaandme@gmail.com.